This is the Ashev Jacob Podcast, episode 17. And here we go with another episode of Ask Chef Jacob. Found online at AskChefJacob.com, part of the Stella Culinary Content Network. And all that fancy stuff. What's up there, Ben?
How you doing, Chef?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah? It's been a while since we've done some of these. People, you know, I don't think anybody listens until we, like, miss a week or two. And then people start writing, asking me, you know, where we're at.
Oh, we gotta do this more often.
Yeah, I'd like to.
It's a nice little, I wouldn't say break, but it's something different.
Oh, man, it's way better than, you know, what we normally do for a living.
Pretty much.
Sweating our balls off in a hot kitchen. So, remember Michael, the guy from Poland?
Yeah.
I think it's...
I believe so, yeah.
I think he's from Poland. I'm pretty sure he's, like, almost 100% from Poland. Anyway, so he sent us in a series of questions, and this time, he actually recorded the audio, which is cool, and he sent me an email. He's like, look at man, like... English isn't my first language, so bear with me.
So he did one of those things where you record and ask questions kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And it was way cool because, I mean, you know, to step outside your comfort zone like that and send me an audio that we can play. Mm-hmm. So we're going to just listen to Michael's question. I broke it up into a couple of more digestible pieces, but here's the part one of his question.
Okay. Hi, Jacob. It's Michael from Poland. English is not my native language. So excuse me if it's not clear to you what I say, but I will risk being misunderstood anyway. I want to ask you a few questions about how to deal with ground meat. How to sear it properly. It's a tricky thing because it leaks a lot of liquid. And once I tried to sear a piece of beef first and then grind it, but I wasn't satisfied with the result. The texture was quite different. So I just want to know your opinion how to do it.
Okay, that's darn good English for saying you're not going to have good English.
I know, right? Yeah, so that's part one. Well, so the liquid leaking when you're searing ground meat, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you, Ben?
You're using, too much fat.
You know, yeah.
And, you know, if you're trying to make a hamburger or something like that, you want something that's, you know, my preference probably 85-15, which is 85% meat, 15% fat, which is pretty high. But
that's kind of lean.
Well, I don't know. My mom always got 93.7. Which, yeah, that's my mom. But
that was my mom too, and that's like she really wanted to brutalize us. Then she'd get the ground turkey, and I'm like, Mom, you can't make burgers out of ground turkey.
And I'd say two things with the liquid: one, the fat content, definitely. You know, if you have too much fat in there, you're gonna have liquid. Also, if you're not properly thawing the meat, it's gonna be nice and it's gonna be sogged out
for sure.
And that's also gonna add to just basically steaming whatever you're trying to sear rather than. Getting a nice clean sear on it.
Yeah, I mean, the thawing of the meat is a big deal if it is frozen. But, as the ice crystals form during the freezing process, it just causes cellular damage. And so you're going to have the leaking of liquid, leaking of fat. So if you're going from a frozen product and you're not, draining it properly. But also, too, I mean, it's just kind of inherent in ground meat that it will leak more juices than a solid piece of meat. I mean,
Definitely, yeah.
It is a piece of ground meat.
You just have more surface area cooking.
Yeah, for sure. Also, too, I mean, temperature can be an issue as well. If you're just sitting there cooking it over low, for like in a pan for a long period of time or medium for a long period of time, you're going to leak out more moisture than not. And I don't know why he seared it first. I mean, maybe just because he thought that he could add more flavor by searing it first and then grinding, but...
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to have issues with cohesion because, as you sear the surface of that meat, I mean, it will make it taste more yummy, But then as you grind it, it's you know, gonna fall apart into smaller bits, and the proteins are already coagulated, so you're not, it's not gonna stick together properly.
Yeah.
So I think you're definitely gonna have some issues there. So for, yeah, for searing, check, I mean, for the leaking issue, I would check your fat ratio, like Ben was saying, and you know, make sure that if you are thawing it, you're thawing it properly. You know, you want to pull it from your freezer and put it in your fridge and let it thaw gently in there.
And what I'll do too, if I'm making, you know, spaghetti or something, like spaghetti meat sauce, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
like I'll thaw the meat and then I'll throw it in a colander in the sink and just kind of let any of that excess blood
and
stuff drip out, just, you know, to make it sear a lot better without kind of steaming itself.
Well, and he asked about searing too in his question in concert with the leaking liquid. So I wonder if like there, it might just be that his meat is too moist, so that's why he's having issues with the searing first. But really, when it comes to searing ground meat, you want to make sure that whatever you're searing it in is just raging hot, whether it's on a grill or in a cast iron pan. You want to get that super hot, because that's the only way you're going to get that crust to form without the little pieces of meat sticking. If you're trying to grill a burger over like a medium hot grill, you're just not going to, it's not going to come out right. It's going to stick to your grate and it's going to overcook by the time you have any form of browning on the outside.
You basically want hot as possible.
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, if you're cooking like a thicker piece of ground meat, like a big old 8-ounce burger, you know, we like to do a 2-step cooking process where we'll slow bake it in an oven like at 225 for, it usually takes about an hour and a half if you have a big 8-ounce patty. And we'll do an instant read probe thermometer or the little chef alarm. And when it beeps at us, when it hits a mid-rare temperature, we'll pull it out, let it rest, and then give it a really quick sear just on a raging hot grill. And that's the, you know, that's the best way to cook a thick burger and to get that sort of coloration. But when you're working with thinner pieces of meat or thinner patties, it's always been my experience that, you know, if unless your skillet or your grill is raging hot, by the time you brown both sides of that patty, the interior is going to be overcooked. So you want to watch for that.
Yeah.
All right, that's part two.
Another thing is, what kind of beef should I use to make things like ragu bolognese or chili con carne, where you have to stew the ground meat in the sauce for a long time? I guess it's better to use meat rich in collagen. But what is the best piece of beef to do it?
So the meat rich in collagen is really only something you need if you're going to keep it whole, if you're going to keep the meat whole. I mean, you definitely want some fat in your grind. But when you talk about braising techniques, you know, like you're doing like a short rib or a shank or something, you know, you're definitely going to have some collagen or connective tissue. But once you grind that same cut of meat, it's gonna break down any of that collagen just by cutting it up into really small bits. So I don't think you have to be worried about the collagen richness, except for the fact that you're using a ground meat product, right? So inherently, just based upon so tougher cuts of meat are always going to have more flavor, and they're always going to be less expensive than the tender cuts of meat. So it wouldn't make any sense to take a beef tenderloin, which is the most expensive cut on the cow, grind it up and cook it down into your chili or your ragu, just because no one's going to be able to tell that it's an expensive cut by the time it's ground up and cooked down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, my two choices for the two applications that he said, chili con carne and bolognese, short rib is great because it has a great ratio of fat.
Mm-hmm.
Once you grind it up, it's good taste. It's got a great ratio. Also, if you take lean sirloin and insert your own fat while grinding, I think those would be both my best options, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for me, oh, excuse me. So I'm going to say something that may be a bit controversial, but you know, from the perspective of a professional chef talking to Michael, who's also a professional chef and opening up his own restaurant, my favorite piece of ground meat or my favorite piece of meat to grind is scrap product.
Well, that's true, too.
What is, you know, what is ground meat? Ground meat is it's scrap. It's waste. They're not, you know, no butcher is taking a ribeye and grinding it up into ground meat and then selling it to you for $3 a pound. You know, they're taking the all the other scraps. They can't work into usable cuts. So my point being is if you have other whole cuts of beef on the menu, you want to buy them whole and then get good at butchery skills and break them down and then use all of that. Because it's always more cost effective to buy a larger cut and fabricate it yourself than to buy it prefab. So, you know, when we're running a steak on the menu, we'll buy in the whole strip loin or the whole tenderloin. We'll break it down ourselves, portion it into the individual steaks, and then we're left with all the excess meat that we can grind and then resell. And of course, you know, you want to take into consideration, your fat to meat ratio, because if your meat is really, really lean, it's not going to be a very good hamburger patty or a very good sausage patty. Or in the reverse, if your meat is super fatty, you're going to have the same issues. Everyone, you know, people are out there talking. I mean, the guys to me, so short rib tends to be a really popular cut of meat to grind up for burgers. And that's totally cool if you want to do it at home. Short rib meat has an awesome flavor. It has about a 30% fat ratio, so you're going to get a really fatty, meaty, juicy burger when you do it. But the guys in restaurants who are buying in short ribs and grinding it up so they can sell a short rib burger
are not having a good food cost.
They're out of their fucking minds.
Yeah. Filet chain, that's the way to go.
Yeah, they're out of their minds. Short rib costs, depending upon the time of year, the short rib costs, you know, $9, $10, $11 a pound. And it fluctuates. When I first started in this business, short rib was dirt cheap.
Yeah, them flats.
Both. Yeah, it was $3.50 a pound. Short ribs, $3.50, $4 a pound. And then, what my meat guy says is all the nationwide. So the high end restaurants started getting more into serving short ribs, but also too all the Korean barbecue places started to become a thing. And Korean barbecues, they just buy up short ribs like it's nuts. It's like one of their signature things. So, yeah, I mean, short ribs is a delicious cut of meat. But, you know, in the end, how much can you really charge for a hamburger? And, now I'm getting off topic, but, you know, whatever. I mean, the whole, like, gourmet burger thing is something that kind of rubs me the wrong way, too, because...
Yeah, the Kobe burger, really.
Yeah, it's just, it's all smoke and mirrors to... Once you take a nice cut of meat and you grind it up, you've lost a lot of it, to be honest with you. I mean, I love hamburgers. We've talked about in the past, In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out. In-N-Out's, and it's cheap. Like, how much does a double-double cost? Like, $4?
$4 at that.
Yeah, so, okay, and In-N-Out, a double-double from In-N-Out, $4, is one of the best hamburgers you can ever bite into. It's absolutely delicious. And then I go to your fancy restaurant, and you're selling me an 8-ounce burger for $20. You're telling me that your hamburger is 5 times better than a double-double from In-N-Out?
Not going to happen.
That's a pretty arrogant statement, my friend.
Yeah. But back to what you were talking about, though. If you're doing this at restaurant level, definitely, you know, don't waste a single bit of scrap. You know, we grind filet chains, you know, just for our family meal or whatnot. And that is it's a perfect ratio.
Yeah.
And... I couldn't think of actually a better hamburger patty than that.
Man, those ground filet chains. And so what we're talking about is if you go to stellaculinary.com/CKS, that stands for Culinary Knife Skills, there's a video there of me breaking down a beef tenderloin. And one of the things that you remove is the side chain. And you take that off. And it has a lot of connective tissue in it, a lot of fat. You don't want that attached to your filet that you're selling for a premium price. But you take that suck and you grind it up. The flavor on it is awesome.
It's awesome, yeah.
It's really good. So, yeah, my favorite cut of meat to grind for hamburgers is the waste product, because that's what ground meat is. That's what it was invented for, is to utilize things that you couldn't sell as a whole steak on a plate. All right.
That's a good answer.
Next thing will be meatballs. I have the same... question about best piece of meat to for meatballs. It's obvious for me that when I do a burger, I should use meat that is good for steak, because then I can sear it and leave the interior part medium rare, so pink color. But when I do meatballs and sauce, it's probably better to stew meatballs and sauce for a long time, and then it looks like I need meat higher in color again. But maybe not. Maybe because it's ground, it's not so tough anymore. So please tell me what is your way to do meatball stewed in sauce. How long should I stew it, and what kind of meat should I use to do it? I guess the temperature of the liquid should be similar to the braising temperatures, or maybe it's better to braise my meatballs in sauce.
Yeah, so the meat for meatballs, I would just use the same thing as you would for a hamburger. So the difference is, the reason why you're able to sear a hamburger and serve it mid-rare is because you've broken down all of that connective tissue during the grinding process. You've broken down all of the collagen during the grinding process.
Yeah, don't worry about the collagen part.
Yeah, so that's why you can take a short rib, and if you want to serve that short rib whole, because it has a lot of intact collagen and connective tissue, you have to slow braise it. And if you try and sear that, you know, in a skillet and serve it mid-rare, then it's going to be super chewy and tough. But if you take that exact same short rib and grind it up, now you can form a patty with it, sear it, and make it, serve a mid-rare burger without it being chewy.
Yeah, and again, meatballs is a is a perfect way to get rid of scrap or whatnot. I don't know what kind of operation he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't be concerned about the amount of time stewing. I don't think you can overstew a meatball
A couple of things with meatballs that you want to take into consideration. So meatballs are more like a free-form sausage, and the magic ratio for lean meat to fat is 30% fat, 70% lean meat when making sausage. That's kind of the magic ratio that you want. So anything less than that, you're going to have issues with. And because you have so much fat, you're technically making an emulsified meat. So a meatball with high fat content is an emulsified meat. Now, a meatball without high fat content is going to be lean, and that's where you get like the mealy sort of grainy meatballs. So you need some sort of binder in there to hold that emulsion together, and usually that emulsion is bread. So you can use bread crumbs. Some of the best meatballs that I've had or that I've made is stale bread that's soaked in milk. And then they'll take that. And also a trick that we'll use too is, so when we're making hamburger patties, we will never salt the mixed meat before we form the patties, because that draws myosin proteins to the surface and it binds the meat together. So when you're biting into a hamburger patty, you want that crumbling texture, right? You don't want it to taste or have the texture of a sausage patty. But in the case of making a meatball, you do want that cohesive texture. So we'll take the meat and the ground meat and the fat, and we'll salt it with about 1% salt by weight of the combined fat and meat. We'll mix it together, and then we'll beat the shit out of it in our big bread dough mixer. We'll use the paddle attachment. And what that does is it overworks the meat, so it brings the myosin, the proteins, up to the surface of the ground meat, and it makes it sticky, so it clings together cohesively. And then at that point, you add your binding agents and your seasoning. So you would take your bread that's been soaked in milk, you mix that in, and then whatever seasonings that you want. And the bread and the milk, we just usually, I'm sure there's a good ratio, but we just add it by sight, you know. And then one of the tricks that that Ben and one of our old cooks did, Zach, they would, or not Ben, Alex. Alex is the meatball guy.
Mm-hmm.
They take a little tiny ice cream scooper, maybe it makes like 1 ounce meatballs. They'll scoop a meatball with the ice cream scooper, drop it into flour, shake off the excess flour, and then take that meatball and either fry it or steam it. And what that does is it sets the meatball and holds it together. And then you can take that set meatball and drop it into your sauce and then stew it in your sauce. But if you just take the raw meatball and drop it into your stewing sauce, if you're not careful, you can break it up and then you're turning this, you know, meatball sauce into like a bolognese sauce. Yeah.
No, steaming them and then frying them definitely works.
Yeah, and I like that because so then what, you know, what we'll do is we'll cheat a little bit, you know, because we have, you know, stock on hand and stuff like that. So to get that meaty flavor in our sauce, we'll make like say a tomato sauce with, you know, fresh ground tomatoes and the addition of like chicken stock or veal stock, pork stock, and make a really flavorful sauce with that. Then we'll cook the meatballs separately and then we'll drop them into the sauce for about the last 20 to 30 minutes of cooking, which makes the execution really, really easy, but it also just, it allows us to separate all the flavors. So we make the sauce perfect first, then we make the meatballs perfect, set the meatballs, you know, using a steaming process, and then just drop them into the sauce so they can kind of marry and get to know each other.
And that's why you asked Chef Jacob.
Yep. All right, so final question.
The thing is, if I do pork or chicken meatballs, should I brine meat? And should I brine a piece of meat before I grind it? Or should I incorporate a bit salty water into ground meat? I'm pretty sure the answers to my questions are not all you have to say about this task. So it would be great if you add even more infos. So I think that's going to be it. And now I just can't wait to hear your response. Bye-bye.
I love this guy.
This guy is awesome.
He's so cool. Michael, if you ever come over to the States, man.
Yeah, come see us.
Come see us.
We'd love to kick it with you.
Yeah. We'll make some meatballs and drink some beer.
I'm going to let you take the initial answer to that question.
Okay.
I have my opinions, but...
Okay, so, yeah, so brine before or after, I wouldn't brine the meat because... So when you're cooking a whole piece of meat, the reason why you brine it is because the meat is lean and it's going to dry out. And so when you salt it before or you brine it before... you have moisture retention in that meat. So like a chicken breast or a pork tenderloin or a pork chop, it's not going to become as dry when you cook it whole. But when you're grinding it, you can add your moistener. So one of the reasons why chicken breast is so dry and why it needs to be brined is because it has a very low fat content. Now, if you're making a meatball, then that point is moot because you need fat in your meatball for it to not be dry. And then when you're adding that 1% salt, like we were talking about, to bring the myosin proteins to the surface and to adhere the meatballs together, then you're kind of negating the reason why you would need a brine in the first place. So if you're making like a chicken breast or say like a turkey breast meatball, you're going to either have to come to the grips with the fact that your fat ass is on a diet and the meatballs are going to taste like shit, or you're going to have to add some fat, okay? Because that's the only two ways around it. You're not going to have a moist meatball without fat. So in the case of like a chicken meatball, I would definitely grind up the leg and thighs along with any extra skin that I had lying around. And because people inherently see more value in chicken breast, then you save that whole piece of chicken breast and you sell it on a sandwich or as an entree or whatever your style of restaurant dictates.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. Definitely don't brine.
Yeah, no, it's really not necessary.
Yeah.
And then he sent me a follow-up email, Michael did.
Okay.
Because he wanted to add one more question, which was just kind of getting our take on sous vide hamburgers, which... you know, are now starting to kind of make it into the consciousness of people because it started with, you know, Modernist Cuisine had a thing in their book on sous vide hamburgers. And then now you kind of see some, you know, a few years later, blog posts popping up now that sous vide has become more mainstream. And my take on it is this. First of all, I love sous vide. It's a great way to control time and temperature cooking and have a really consistent product. If you're going to be cooking... say 6 to 8 burgers that you're going to do all at once to impress your family and friends and show off your sous vide technology, then by all means do it. And the way that you would do that is you want to sink the burgers individually in Ziploc bags using a water displacement test or a water displacement technique. And you don't want to do this with like thin, flimsy 4 ounce, 2 ounce burgers.
8 ounce burger.
Yeah, you want a big old 8 ounce patty, and you place it in a large Ziploc bag. You drop that bag into your circulator as you allow the water to press the air out of that bag. And then you cook it at, you know, a mid-rare temperature, medium temperature, however you prefer it. If you're, you know, if you like cooking your burgers well done or mid-well, then sous-viding them isn't really necessary because you can do that without the help of sous-vide technology. And, you know, you cook it at a mid-rare temperature for about an hour. And you can hold it for up to 4 hours. So that makes it super convenient if you're having people over for a barbecue. You drop, you know, your 8 patties in, you crack some beers, maybe work on some side dishes, get your barbecue raging hot, because all you have to do is you sear your burgers, and then once when you're ready to eat, within that 1 hour to 4 hour time window, take the burgers out of the bags, you know, give them a gentle pat dry, let them rest at room temperature for a couple minutes just so they don't overcook when you throw them on the grill, and then brush them with some cooking oil. Drop them on your grill or throw them in a hot skillet to sear. Now, with that said, I don't think it's very applicable for a restaurant, because when you're selling hamburgers in a restaurant, volume is the name of the game.
You're going to sell a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, sous vide just doesn't make sense in that application. I'm a huge fan of sous vide. It just doesn't work there.
For sure. I mean, and I love the consistency of it, but... You know, I mean, for you to pay your rent, you're going to have to sell a couple thousand burgers in a day, you know, and maybe that's an exaggeration, but during lunch service, if you're running a hamburger joint, right, you're doing just hamburgers, I mean, you got to be selling at least 300 burgers a day during that lunch service. And if you're not, you're probably going to have issues paying your bills, because even though hamburgers can be highly profitable, it's going to take you're going to have to sell a lot more hamburgers to pay your rent than you would selling a filet mignon, you know. So when you're selling a cheaper product, volume is the name of the game, and you're going to have a bottleneck with your immersion circulator. You're going to have banks and banks and banks, and you're going to have constantly people placing hamburger patties in Ziploc bags and dropping them. It's just not very feasible for a commercial environment. However, what is feasible is you get yourself a CVAP. Now, that's like it's a bagless... sous vide machine. It's basically a water oven, but the humidity control in it is so dialed in that it'll cook things to with like one tenth of 1 degree, or I think it's like 1 degree Fahrenheit air at the most. So during a busy lunch rush, you just have a bunch of hamburger patties preformed on half sheet trays, and you have those in the CVAP. They're already cooked perfectly, and then as the orders come in, you pull them, you sear them, and you serve them. The one drawback to that is once your lunch rush is over, any hamburger patties that are left, obviously you can't reheat those and serve them the next day as mid-rare burgers because, you know, it's dangerous. You can get people sick. But what you can do is you can take those patties that are already pre-cooked, brown them in a saute pan, and that's where your bolognese, your chili comes from. Take that chili, drop it over fries. Now you got chili fries on your menu. That'd be my approach if I was trying to use that sort of technology. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode. So, Michael, I appreciate you asking your questions and keeping us up to date on what you're doing. If you have your own culinary questions, whether it's industry related or cooking related or whatever, you just want to talk food and cooking, which we always love doing, head on over to AskChefJacob.com. They'll just drop you into a Stella Culinary page, where you can record your question and all that good stuff. Check out our forums. You can ask questions there, hang out, give a little chit chat. Where else can you find us, Ben? All over the place. Twitter, YouTube,
Facebook.
I just killed the music. Oh god, I'm off with this. Come to a pop-up dinner, come to a boot camp, all that good stuff. All right, we'll see you guys in the next episode.
Check you later.